Hey mamas, I'm Alyssa, registered dietitian, picky eating specialist, and mama of two. You're listening to the Nutrition for Littles podcast, aimed at helping you raise healthy, independent eaters. Each week, we will tackle topics like picky eating, mealtime struggles, baby-led weaning, and so much more. Let's jump right into today's topic. All right. Hello, hello, and welcome back to the podcast. I'm so excited for today's episode because I've got my friend Devin here. She is a parenting expert. I cannot wait to introduce you to her. In fact, I'll just send it over to you, Devin. She's here. Can you go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and let them know who you are, what you do, and maybe a little bit about how you came to be who you are?
Absolutely. So I'm Devin Koontzman, and I am the original toddler expert on Instagram. I'm also an ICF certified coach and the founder of Transforming Toddlerhood, and also the author of the brand new book, Transforming Toddlerhood, How to Handle Tantrums and Power Struggles and Raise Resilient Kids Without Losing Your Mind. So I'm super excited.
Oh my gosh, that's a great title.
I know, right? It's like all the things. It's all the things for the first, like from ages 0 or 1 to 5, right? It's like then that first like 5 years, all the things that we deal with. So yeah. I am super excited for that to be out. And I, for many years before I started Transforming Toddlerhood, which, you know, I really started with this idea of dispelling the myth that toddlerhood is terrible, because toddlerhood has a bad reputation, right? Like society is always telling us like, oh, brace yourself, terrible twos are coming. Just wait till you have a little three-nager. So you like head into this period, like white knuckling it, like, oh gosh, what am I going to do? It's going to be hard. But the reality is it's a challenging developmental period and a critical one. And once I understood all of that, that's how Transforming Toddlerhood was born. And prior to that, I was a nanny for many high-profile families. After I graduated from school with my degree in psychology and child development, I was a nanny for families all over the world, and I just spent a lot of time with toddlers, helping toddlers adjust to a new sibling, being with toddlers all day long, supporting them in their development, and started to notice this big challenge between what toddlers were trying to communicate with their behavior and what parents thought their toddlers were communicating. For example, a parent would come home from work and their toddler would just like all of a sudden be really clingy and crying and melting down. And the parents sometimes would be like, why'd I come home? I guess I should have just stayed at work. This is, you know, they want to come home and have these beautiful moments with their kids. And they didn't understand that their toddler wasn't being bad, that this was their toddler communicating, having that emotional release. And so that's when I realized, and through my own transformation and thinking that a toddler's behavior was a reflection of how good or bad I was at my job, and how good or bad that child was, and knowing that no behavior isn't good or bad, it's communication. And through all of that, Transforming Toddlerhood was born.
Wow. Oh my gosh. I love that. There's so many pieces to that that stuck out to me. One of them is right there at the end where you said that basically your child's, you know, obviously we're talking to mostly parents here, your child's behavior isn't a reflection of you. Can you dissect that a little bit more? Because I think that is one thing that I wish more parents knew. I wish my past self knew when I first had a kid. And I just think it's so important. Can you dissect that a little bit more?
It is so important. And I love talking about this subject. And I talk about it at length in the introduction of my book, because it is so important to understand that when you have a baby, your baby relates to you as an extension of themselves. And we often relate to our babies as an extension of us. And that's how babies survive. And that's how, you know, we get through that first 6, 9, 12 months of life with a new little one. But the whole point of toddlerhood is for your child to become a separate individual, to discover their sense of self. So all of a sudden, we have a toddler who's trying to understand how they are now different, a different separate being from you. Right. And we still sometimes, though, are relating to them as an extension of ourselves. And so we take that behavior that this child has very, very personally, and we either make it mean something about them and or about ourselves. And typically, we're looking through this lens that's like very dichotomous, like, oh, this is bad, this is good. And bad is push it away, get rid of it. Good, have more of that. And so we get trapped in this cycle of thinking that our child is doing this to us, they're having bad behavior, we're failing as parents because our kids didn't listen, you know,
Oh,
all of
yeah.
these things. So that's where that really stems from.
And I, just to share my own experience, I remember with my first, it's so funny. I have three kids. How many kids do you have?
One.
One. Yeah. So with my third kid versus my first kid, it's like this crazy difference of with my first kid, I made everything mean something about who he was going to be as an adult. It was like, well, if he doesn't stop hitting, this is like so funny to think, but truly, if he doesn't stop hitting now as a 2-year-old little child boy, then he's gonna be an abuser. Like, I can't, like, it was like this future forward thinking of like, oh my gosh, if I don't stop this right now and I absolutely have to like put an end to it, make him realize how serious this is as a 2-year-old, then his entire life is gonna be formed by being this person and he's gonna be violent and all. I was so afraid of this one thing being this forever thing. And now, as I have three kids, your perspective changes. And of course, with you, with like nannying multiple kids and having so much experience with so many different types of children and being the expert that you are working with so many families, you probably see this too. But it's like with my last kid, or maybe my last kid, our third kid, I'm like, there's so much perspective to be like, okay, this is just something I get to teach him. And we get to like work on it together over time. I don't make it this forever thing. Of course, it's something we tackle and work on, but it's not something that is in my brain as like a new mom being like, this, it all rides or dies on this hill if I handle this thing exactly right, or I say the right thing or see the right script. Is that something you see with a lot of parents worrying about or thinking about?
Oh my gosh, 10,000%. And a big part of this comes from not understanding what typical toddler behavior
Right.
is, like what
Yes.
typical behavior looks like, which I go to in depth in my book, and then how to decode it. And so when we
Yeah.
don't know what typical behavior is and we don't set realistic expectations for the behavior, that's how we get stuck in that fear cycle. And then
Right.
as soon as we start extrapolating what we think may happen, get stuck in that fear cycle, that's when we start using those coercive fear-based tactics to try to get our child's behavior under control because it's stemming from our own stress response and fear response. And it just creates this vicious cycle
Yep.
where we find ourselves kind of behaving and parenting in a way that isn't actually in alignment with our values and goals, but we're so afraid that if we don't act now because we feel this deep sense of urgency from being in the stress response,
Yeah.
that we're blinded by that urgency. And that's what really keeps that disempowered cycle going on. And we've all been there. I've been there. I mean, I'm a
Right.
parent. I'm not a perfect person, but that's the good news is your child doesn't need a perfect parent. Your child doesn't need a robot parent. Like
Yeah.
that's a whole nother topic we can talk about, but your child
Right.
doesn't need a perfect parent.
Yeah, and I, you know, there was two distinctions that you made that really helped my parenting like immensely. One was slowing down and realizing I don't have to handle this behavior, this issue, this, you know, situation right now. I don't have to tackle it right now because I don't have the skills. I'm, like you said, I'm in this stress response. I'm not thinking very clearly. There's a lot of like emotions running high. I'm not able to handle it the way that I wish I would, right? And so that was one when I realized I didn't have to handle it in the moment. We can come back to it later. We can role play it. We can, you know, talk through it in a different way. And the second one that you just hit on the head too was realizing, yeah, not having to be a perfect parent, realizing that actually the best skills that I can give my kids is how to cope with disappointment, how to cope when someone doesn't treat them right, how to accept forgiveness, or how to give forgiveness, how to accept forgiveness, how to accept apologies and repair. And that was like a huge pivotal moment. I actually remember seeing this post. It went kind of viral. I don't know if you saw it. It was years ago, so you know, not everyone remembers every post, but this one really stuck out to me because I remember seeing this mom and she was like pushing her kid on a swing. It was like this really idyllic background, and she said something to the effect of like, I'm raising my children in a way that they won't have to heal from their childhood. And I was so triggered because I was like, actually, that's a horrible way to parent your kid, is to like be wor and I used to be there, which is why it triggered me, right? Is like I thought that too. Like, they're not gonna have to heal from this. They're not gonna have to like go to therapy and talk about their mom. Like, they're gonna have the perfect mom and everything was great, and they're gonna go off to college and tell their roommate what an amazing mom they had. And actually, that's such an unhealthy way to parent your child because if you're so worried about being perfect now for what they say later, you're missing opportunity for them to show humanness, show mistakes, show them and model for them how to tackle things when it gets hard, how to repair when you do something wrong. And I got so triggered at it because I was like, that's actually missing the whole point, right? And some of the most beautiful things that have happened between me and my children and our relationship is showing them that I make mistakes too, and owning up to them and showing them the power of apologizing and showing them the power of me being a human. I don't know. Do you remember that post or do you agree with what I'm saying
I've
here? Am I
seen
on the right
posts like
track?
that before, absolutely. And I probably is that same exact post because I remember those words. And this is a word I use over and over again, is being human. And I mention it in almost every chapter of my book because our children need a human parent, one that's willing to be vulnerable, one that when they make a mistake, are willing to admit it, who's willing to apologize and repair the relationship, who's willing to not have all the answers so you can figure it out together, who's willing to step back, let their child make mistakes, and then guide them through picking up the pieces. All of these quote unquote like challenges are actually opportunities for your learning and growth and for your child's learning and growth. It's just so important. And this idea you mentioned of slowing down, I really want to underscore that because you see, I think this is just a wild misconception. Like you see so many people talking about positive parenting or gentle parenting. They're like, well, you just gotta pause. You gotta pause before you respond. Okay, like theoretically, we all know that we need to pause, get our mind right, and then, respond to what's happening. But when you are in that stress response and that sense of urgency is just pressing down on you, you can't think straight or think about anything else. So that's why I tell parents that the goal here, instead of thinking about pausing, think about creating safety. Because if you've established physical safety, such as, no one is hitting or kicking anyone, no one's about to fall off the couch and break their head open, like no one is about to take a trip to the ER, everyone is physically safe. You can tell yourself, I am safe. My child is safe. This is not an emergency. This is not an emergency. What's more important is trying to disrupt your stress response than trying to pause. And when we start practicing disrupting the stress response and then creating that emotional safety, right? Grounding ourselves, maybe validating how we're feeling, using I statements, reframing our child's behavior. I talk about lots of ideas for this in the book, but that's when the pause will naturally start to happen then. But we really beat ourselves up when we're like, oh, I was supposed to pause, but I couldn't, because we're just feeling that sense of urgency. And that's another part of being human. It's about disrupting the stress response, not trying to be the perfect parent who always pauses.
I love that so much. You kind of mentioned this idea of like the positive parenting and gentle parenting, and there's a lot to unpack there. So, what would you call yourself? What do you think of these other like words that are kind of new-ish to kind of show? What do you think? Like, there's I guess we can really dive into this, but there's so many misconceptions about what it means. There's like the FAFO parenting that's
Oh,
like
yes.
popping up. There's like the boomer parenting. So, what are your thoughts on kind of all these different parenting styles, and what do you think is either the most important thing to take hold of versus like labeling it, which is kind of how I teach my clients, is like, hey, we don't have to label our parenting. Here are the principles that I think are important. And then what do you think is like the biggest misconception about these parenting styles?
Well, for a long time, I always tried to I'm like, well, it's like positive, but it's respectful, but it's effective, but it's Montessori-ish. I'm like, yeah, like all of these labels, which I understand. This is why we label kids' behavior. Our brain needs labels to make sense of things. So it makes sense that we're trying to put labels on all of this, right? It's like gentle, it's, whatever. I recently have decided what I do is called developmentally smart parenting. We
Oh,
are
I love that.
taking a child's development, where they are at in their development, into account, and we are using parenting practices that work with their development, not against it. And that encompasses all of these labels and
Right.
genres that have their time and place, but often get misconstrued, right?
Totally. Yep.
So I think the biggest misconception about all of these labels is really what happens and stems from an overcorrection, right? Like parents don't want to be what I call the controlling commander. I have a chapter in my book where I talk about different roles as a parent, and one is called the controlling commander, where the child's feelings, emotion, needs are not taken into account. It's just my way or the highway. Many of us were raised that way, and we don't want to repeat that. But then we kind of swing the pendulum over here to what I call the permissive pushover, where the child's in charge and we're just trying to like keep them from crying and we're walking on eggshells and all the things. So really, the biggest misconception is that being a good parent is in taking care of your child's emotions means that your child is never upset. But guess what? You need to set limits for your child because kids need limits to feel safe and to grow and to learn and to develop. But the problem is that toddlers are developmentally driven to have a sense of control and to feel powerful. So when you set a limit, it disrupts or pushes against that developmental need. So they're going to have a reaction. They're going to cry. They're going to, maybe like kick or throw something. That's developmentally appropriate. But many parents think, oh, I set a limit. Now my child's upset, they're bad, or I'm wrong. And so, anyways, that's a long-winded way to say that I think the biggest misconception is that our children always should be happy for if we're taking care of their emotions. And that makes parents not want to set any limits because kids often have a developmentally appropriate reaction when we set the limit.
I love this so much. I think that's so important. And I oftentimes try to coach a lot of the parents I work with, as you guys know, listening all about picky eating, right? And it's so funny. I feel like as a parent and as an educator and as a dietitian and a picky eating specialist, like I know the table. Like I can really, at the dinner table, I get it. Like I get parenting, I set the limits, I understand all this stuff. And then other parts of my life with my kids will come up and I'm like, I don't know. Like it's so funny because I'll talk to my parenting experts friends. And I have a friend who's like a sleep consultant specifically for like toddlers and older kids. And her and I will chat and I have issues with my kids with sleep. And she's like, but you do this at the table with picky eating. And I'm like, yeah, but it's different. She's like, no, it's not. Like actually, it's not. It's like actually it's just about being consistent across all areas of your kids' lives. And you know, for some reason sleep is just like a thing for me. So anyways, bringing this back to kind of what you had mentioned is that this idea of our kids not being okay, like either we're wrong or they're wrong if they're upset. And I think this is such an important thing for parents to understand. The intention is not to make our kids upset. The intention is to teach them and hold those limits, have those boundaries. And if and when they get upset, teach them then how to like cope with it and be okay being upset. Like you're powerful. And something that I noticed specifically in my community, which is something that I experienced, was if we were into like the baby-led weaning of like let your kids lead and put foods on their plate and like let them feed themselves, it and also nursing on demand. Those two things in parenting like shift when all of a sudden they become toddlers, right? And then you're like still holding on to these like baby-led ideas. And I actually don't really love the term baby-led weaning because of that. And then it becomes like I'm still carrying over these principles of nursing on demand and baby-led weaning, which means they're in charge. And then they go into toddlerhood and you're like confused because you're like, well, you used to know best. Like I used to take you were the leader of baby-led weaning and you were the leader of nursing on demand. And now all of a sudden you're in charge and this doesn't feel right. Like the power dynamic has shifted. And so I remember that being in my parenting journey around a year and a half where I was like, what am I doing? Like now I still have this tiny toddler who's in charge and I'm thinking that he knows better. And I was just so confused at the moment of recognizing or reconciling, like there are things that they get to be in charge of, but ultimately I'm the leader, right? Like I'm ultimately in charge of setting those boundaries that's best, right, and safe for them. Do you have any advice for some parents who are kind of struggling to figure that out of the power dynamics? And I want them to have control, but not too much control. And I want to, you know, I want them to be independent and creative, and I want to not get in their way, but I also am finding that this is leading to power struggles.
This is so great. This is why I was adamant that I had the parenting rule chapter in my book because, and it's really the first chapter after the introduction because it's so foundational. So the way I like to talk about this is when we're on that disempowered continuum of the controlling commander and the permissive pushover, it's like where everyone's fighting to be in charge, or sorry, in control. Everyone's fighting for control, right? And so when we're only doing something child-led, it's like extreme. It's like over here, because like the child is 100% in control. It can be too extreme, right? So, what we want to do is jump off of this continuum just somewhere over here to the confident leader and guide where you're in charge. And so, what that means, and it comes back to like setting limits, it's about letting your kid, and this is a Montessori concept, having freedom within boundaries. So, it's about letting your child have those child-led moments because that gives them a sense of control, which feeds their developmental drive to have a sense of control, which is going to create more cooperation, right? Because you're not fighting against their developmental drive, but it has to be within a container that you create. And that is the part that often gets missed. And then parents will set a limit when they're trying to set that container, and then their toddler just goes off and does whatever they want. Like, they didn't hear that limit. I mean, they heard it, but they're totally ignoring it. They're like,
I'm busy.
how toddlers do, right? We all know that. And so what I want parents to understand and caregivers to understand is that setting the limit is actually the first step, not the last step. And I think we often think it's the last step, but it's really the first step in creating that container.
I love that. And I think, something me and my husband struggle with and have more so earlier on in our parenting journey, my son's 9 now, was really this idea of like getting ahead of it because we were so in the thick of it. We didn't even know it was coming. It was like we didn't know he was going to push that limit. Like I never said those things to my parents. Like he would not even him, actually, my daughter really is the one who yells, "I hate you," at me. And I'm like, "Oh my gosh, I never said that to my parents." So I'm like, that is so, I never made a container for this because I never expected you to say that. So that I'm like, I'm being very reactive instead of proactive. So we have like a different mindset now as we've gone through, multiple. I feel so bad for my firstborn. I'm like, he gets all our roughest parts of our parenting, and a lot of it's been refined. He also gets the most time with us. So I try to remember that. It's all works out. But I think what's really important to remember is this idea of really understanding that being proactive of setting those boundaries and then updating it as needed. And a lot of times, especially with toddlers, like we don't even feel like we have time to think, breathe, shower, sleep. Like we're already like going to like the very top of our needs and capacity. So trying to come up with those things are really difficult. So in that, you had kind of mentioned this idea of behavior being communication. Can you unpack that a little more? Because I think that was also a really good aha moment for me personally as a parent. And then I coach a lot of my students that, especially with things like food throwing or getting up from the table or sneaking food, like the behavior that we're allocating I don't know, we're allocating it incorrectly for what it means versus you're saying like behavior is communication. Can you unpack that a little bit for people who are listening?
Yeah, and this really comes back to that idea of like our brains wanting to label everything to make sense of it, right? So it's like so tempting to put labels on everything, including behavior. So oftentimes, what happens when we're trying to make sense of all of these behaviors, we're labeling them as rude, mean, bad, manipulative, all of these things, when actually our child's trying to communicate. So what are they communicating? And I list this all out very clearly in my book in the Decoding Behavior chapter, where it's what there's so many things. First, they're communicating their level of brain development, right? We know that a toddler, they have very immature brains, especially the upper brain that is responsible for all of these higher function thinking, planning, impulse control, all of this. So we know that about them. They have very little life experience. So it's communicating their lack of skills. It's also communicating what's happening in their sensory system, which I have a chapter dedicated to the sensory system because we often forget that how our child is interpreting and taking in their sensory world is going to impact their behavior, which I know you see a lot of that, especially with picky eating, right? And so we need to consider the sensory system. Then it's also communicating their feelings and emotions, their needs, which could be basic needs. Or they like, hunger, tired, need for connection, or it could be developmental needs like the need to be independent, have a role in the family, feel capable, have a sense of control. These are all developmental needs that are very prominent during the toddler years. And so when we look at the behavior and say, like, okay, your child hit you, right? So when we see that, we're like, if we're only focused on the behavior, we're like, okay, they hit. But if we get curious and we're like, what is that behavior trying to communicate or tell me? Then it's like, oh, my child is hitting me because they don't want to take a bath, but really this is about the fact that they're tired. Or my child is sensory sensitive or has like sensory integration issues. And so the feeling of the water in the bathtub or washing their hair really upsets them. And so they're already going to that fight or flight response. There's so many different things. And so what we, or it's like, oh, my toddler needs a sense of control, right? Because they were actually playing and now I've just plucked them up and like taken them to the bathtub and they're like, I have no say over my life. What's happening here? Right. So it's about getting curious, curious about what's happening, getting to know the things that drive behavior, and getting curious about what might be happening for your child. And then as you get an older toddler, around 3 or 4 years old, and they have better expressive language skills, they'll be able to start telling you more of what's happening as well. But curiosity is your best friend. And even if you don't know the exact reason, just knowing that it is communicating something can also completely change how we respond.
And I think this is like a great example of when my daughter says, "I hate you," which she doesn't say anymore. But when she did, it was so shocking to me. And I took
How
it
old
so
was she?
personally. She was three. I think she was three with the first time. Yeah, three, three and a half. And I was like so shocked. I was so hurt. I was like, "Oh my gosh, I'm doing something wrong. My daughter hates me." Of course, my brain going, "This is forever." And realizing, yeah, getting curious, like, okay, she doesn't know how to communicate. I'm frustrated because I don't want to go to bed. I'm frustrated because I've lost control. I'm fr you know, like she's not going, "Excuse me, mom, can I talk about how frustrated I am at your blah blah blah?" Like she doesn't know how to do that. So she just knows, "I hate you. I don't want to play with you anymore. You're not invited to my birthday party." Like actually all the like cute things that they say when they're frustrated because they don't know. Like they don't know how to communicate. So, and that really did help us to get curious of like, okay, what's actually going on? Teaching her the language to use. Instead of "I hate you," I can tell her, "You're frustrated because you didn't get the toy, your brother got it," or whatever. And I'm able to communicate that to her. And now she's way more expressive with her language in all sorts of different ways, which is really good. So I think exactly right, your example.
Yeah, can I? And one thing I just want to say about this is why it's so important to understand developmentally typical behavior because you have babies who communicate just by crying. That's basically all they have. Then you get a 1 and 2 year old, they're crying, but now they're like hitting, kicking, biting, throwing, using their bodies a lot to communicate because they understand what we're saying. They have the receptive language skills, but they don't have the expressive language skills to tell us. Then you have the 3 and 4 year olds who all of a sudden have this newfound freedom of being able to tell us things, but they're still having these big emotions that they don't know what to do with. So then they start experimenting. They still experiment with their behavior some, but now they're experimenting with the words. So that's when you start hearing. So instead of like kicking you, they're going to say, "You're a mean mommy. I don't like you." But again, it doesn't mean that they're being rude. What it means is they're trying to express what they're thinking and feeling on the inside. You probably like said, "No, we can't go outside and ride bikes right now. We need to take a bath." And then, "You're a mean mommy." What that means is, I'm disappointed that I can't do what I want right now.
Which is completely normal and okay. And you still get to take the bath, right? I love that so much. And I think that is really important for parents to like kind of separate themselves from what we choose to believe. And this was something that was told to me really early on in my parenting journey. I think from my mom actually was like, "Don't parent out of embarrassment," or like when you're in public and your kid is having a meltdown or your kid is, saying like in front of your mother-in-law, she's, my kids will be like, "I hate you," in front of my mother-in-law. I'm like, "Oh gosh." Like, but instead of thinking of like, "Oh, what is she thinking about me as a parent and my kid and who she is?" It's like, no, I'm focusing on my daughter and the connection with my daughter. What is she feeling right now? How is she upset? And letting her know it's okay to be upset. Still doesn't mean she gets to like go ride bikes when she needs to take a bath or whatever that might be. But focusing on the emotion behind that and getting curious has been such a game changer for not only my relationship with my daughter, but also like my own confidence as a parent. Because if I was parenting out of embarrassment, shame, judgment from others, worry about what they might think about me or they think about my kid or do they want her to play again or whatever that might be. Now I'm making decisions that don't align with my core values, which you talked about earlier, which I think is so important. And then I feel guilt and shame afterwards. And then I don't like where our relationship is at, that I'm repairing, that I'm taking her out for ice cream. It's like this like battle of all of a sudden I'm not parenting from who I want to be parented as. So then my confidence takes a dive. And then I show up poorly again, and it's like this, like you talked about at the very beginning, it's like full circle going into that cycle and really getting stuck in it versus saying, okay, I'm just going to focus on me and my daughter right now. How is she feeling? That doesn't mean she's getting away with it. And I think a lot of people think they're getting away with it. We're raising brats, like they're going to be spoiled. They're not going to be ready for the real world. And it's like actually they're going to be more prepared for the real world because they know how to emotionally regulate themselves when things don't go their way, when they still hit that boundary. I wanted to talk a little bit, kind of specific. So my audience, a lot of their parenting struggles come at the table, right? So I hear it all the time. We've got food throwing, not coming to the table, and getting like, if they're not served something they like, they either yell yucky or they get up and go get themselves a snack from the pantry. So I'd love to get some like tactical advice from you while we have you for my audience. Do you have any advice for those? Those are like the three, I would say those are the three big ones that are like behavior related,
You said food throwing,
food
yelling yucky.
throwing, yelling yucky at food. And when they don't like the food, like when they yell yucky, they'll just like, kids will just get up and go get a snack from the pantry. Like, kids, parents don't want to put locks on their pantry. They don't want to have to like feel like food is locked down or like shame them for getting, something different. But it's also like, that's not what's served. Like, this is the boundary. This is what's on the dinner plate. You can't just go get some goldfish because you're mad about the broccoli on your plate, you know? Those are probably the three big ones. I'm assuming they probably have like a similar parenting strategy. Can you give us any tips or strategies that you'd recommend in those moments?
Well, I think like the biggest thing overall is like, again, like going from this place of automatic reacting to intentionally responding. So it's coming back to creating that safety, right? Is everyone physically safe? Okay, this is not an emergency. Okay, let me create the emotional safety that gives you time to kind of calm down. Because here's the reality. If you respond to your kid in 5 seconds or 5 minutes, as long as they're physically safe, it honestly doesn't matter, right? And so we don't have to like be fooled by that sense of urgency, because I feel like a lot of the things that happen at the table go south really fast because we're reacting with that sense of urgency when we just need to focus on creating the physical and emotional safety and then dealing with it after that peace has been established. So that's the first thing I'd like to say. I think the second thing is that we often assume that food throwing means that a child doesn't like the food, or even yelling yucky means that a child doesn't like the food, or even going to get a snack out of the pantry means the child doesn't like the food. And okay, maybe they don't prefer it, right? But it doesn't necessarily mean they don't like it. And, or it could mean a million other things. They're full. They've already filled up on milk, on snacks, on, who knows? They're trying to get your attention because it's really a bid for connection. There's so many other things that can be happening. That's where curiosity is super helpful. But I think that if we realize that, that this might mean it's more of like a preference thing versus don't like, we can start treating these situations differently. We don't have to take the yucky personally or go into that fear cycle of like they're never going to eat the broccoli. We don't, right? So we can start setting limits in a way that makes sense developmentally and for the situation, right? And the thing is that if your child gets up from the table to get the snacks out of the pantry, we have to use our environment. I always say use your environment to your like advantage. So like, okay, if you don't want to put like a lock at the top of the pantry, totally makes sense. But like put the snacks somewhere where your toddler can't reach them, or keep them in a bin on top of the refrigerator. That's a great place like for snacks and stuff. But like use your environment to a way in a way that's like going to help you. And like take information like yucky just as information, not as like something that you have to react or respond to. Quite frankly, if your child says yucky, you don't even really need to respond to it.
Right. I say that all the time.
You
Like,
don't
it's not a
even really need to
question.
respond to it. If your kid's throwing food, I mean, here's the thing. You try, don't respond at first. See what happens. See what they're actually doing. Now, if this is like repeated all the time, you know, 18-month-olds love learning cause and effect. They also love feeding the family pet. So, like, get your family pet in another room. But I think it's like just about slowing down, using the environment to your advantage, and really setting limits as needed, but not setting reactionary limits that you can't follow through on.
Oh, yes, that is very important. It's like the age old, like, your word should be gold. Like, you shouldn't be saying something you can't follow through on, right? And that's what happens with a lot of parents, is they'll go, well, then fine, dinner's over. They'll be really reactionary. They'll take them out of their high chair. Dinner's over, and then they're screaming for food or whatever right before bed, and they don't want to be up all night with a hungry kid. So then they feed them, and then it's like, well, that worked. Like, now your kid has just learned that if they throw their food because they don't like it, they'll get something else before bed because they don't, want them to
Yeah,
put
I'd
them to
love
bed
to give an
hungry.
example. Like, my toddler would love, a lot of days, my toddler's having his lunch from like a bento box because we've been like, he's gone to preschool or we've been on the go. I don't know. But he like really loves to skip some of the things in his bento box. And then, you know, a little bit later, he wants a snack. I'm like, oh, you're hungry. Here's your food. There's still food in here. Here you go. And sometimes he has like a little, like, you know, meltdown, or I call it grumping. He'll grump at me a little bit. It's not
I
quite a
like that.
meltdown, but it, you know, he's definitely not happy about it. And I just act like nothing's happening and keep moving on. And then guess what? He eats some of the stuff that was in there. And once I, like, he's at least like ate some of the stuff that's in there that I know he likes but might not prefer in that moment because he'd rather have something else, you know? Then I'm like, okay, yeah, we'll move on to other snacks. Or after dinner, like, classic, my kid doesn't want to sit for more than 5 to 7 minutes at the table, which actually is typical for this age. But guess what? He didn't get to eat enough food. So when it's time for bed and he's like, oh, I want an apple, I want prunes, you know, he always wants some type of like fruit, something sweet and sugary. And I'm like, oh, you're still hungry. Look, your plate's right here. And sometimes, like, he eats the rest of his dinner while we're reading books, but that's what works for our family. But the bigger, I think what I'm trying to say is, like, you want to be flexible within a general set of boundaries that you create. So you're not locked in power struggles, but you're not so rigid, you're locked in power struggles, but you're still in charge with those boundaries. So.
Yeah, an analogy that I really like, I use in my program, is like a backyard. It's like, if you just give kids endless access to, like, I live in Colorado. So, like, the hillsides and the mountains, and there's a lot of dangerous stuff there. There's like, they can get stuck in holes. They can fall down the mountain cliff. Like, there's so many things that they can find that are dangerous. There's snakes out there. There's whatever.
Yeah,
But then
fall
if
into
you
like
put
a
them,
river or something, you know, a stream.
exactly, no big deal. But then if they're in the backyard and there's a fence, it's like, now I've put up a fence for you, and now you can go play out in the backyard. Now I don't have to watch over every move because I know anything I've put inside the fence is safe, right? And of course, every once in a while we do have a gardener snake in there, but you get the point, right? It's like, this is the boundary. This is literally the boundary, the fence line, and everything inside of here is safe for you to run around and play and have that control, have that autonomy without going somewhere dangerous or unsafe. So I love that. It seems like we're just absolutely aligned. I'm all about the root cause approach for picky eating. It sounds like exactly kind of what you're talking about, that decoding behavior, that chapter. I cannot wait to dive into that. I think that's going to be so helpful for so many parents. Because I think it is so easy for us to, especially probably how we are parented, take behavior and make it about us, make it about them, make it about our relationship, take it as a criticism, take it as, whatever it might be, and get really offended by it and get really hurt by it. And of course, I'm hurt when my daughter says, I hate you. I know she doesn't hate me, right? So, like, there's a level of me where I'm like, okay, no, she loves me. I'm a great mom. Like, it's okay. And I get reassurance from my husband and all these things. But I'm like, but actually, when I look at her behavior, she's hurt because she doesn't get to spend more time with me. She has to go to bed or whatever. It's not about the thing that she says. It's about why she's saying it and that root cause, that decoding the behavior behind it. I absolutely love that. I know we're kind of wrapping up here, but I'd love for you to share, is there one thing that kind of sticks out to you that either you're like, find yourself coaching a lot of parents about right now, that's really specific, or that you just wish all toddler parents knew that would make things so much easier? I know it kind of covered a few of those, but is there anything specific that we haven't been able to cover that you'd like to talk about
Yes.
before we wrap
Well,
up?
I think the one of the biggest things that I think every toddler parent can benefit from that I love to talk about is this idea of take some time. So I always say this is the starting point. This is like the baseline starting point for transforming your parenting and transforming your toddler's behavior is look for the behavior you want to see. Look for more of it because likely that behavior is happening, but you're so focused on the behavior that you don't want to see that when the behavior you want to see is happening, you're not noticing it because your brain's hyper focused on the other stuff. So, really be intentional about looking for the behavior you want to see and then acknowledge it out loud. So, you're not only training your brain to see more of that behavior, which is going to make you feel more positive about your child and about your own parenting, if you acknowledge it out loud. Your child's going to hear you when you say, "Hey, thanks for putting your plate in the sink. Oh, I saw you pick up those toys. I appreciate that." You know, just calling out the behavior that you want to see, even if it's not perfect behavior. Like, "Oh, I saw your brother took your toy and I saw you wanted to hit him and then you decided not to." That's a lot of
Yeah.
self-control. So, really, doing this is going to change not only how your experience of parenting your child is going to change your parenting and your child's behavior, I think it's like the best place to start.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that can apply to adults too, right? Like, I love to be acknowledged for things I'm doing well and be called out. And my husband and I always like really try to be intentional about that. And so it's so
Right.
funny. I know for me as a parent, when a new parent especially, I just thought of kids as so different than adults. And really, we're just not. I don't like to be told what to do either, you
Right,
know? We're
right.
the
Well, I mean,
same.
here's the spoiler alert, okay? The big spoiler alert is parenting is a type of relationship, and we're in so many relationships. So, a lot of the stuff that I talk about every day at Transforming Toddlerhood and in this book actually can apply to your spouse, your parenting partner, your peers, your boss, so many different situations because we're in all different types of relationships in our life.
Absolutely. Yeah. And we're all just humans,
We
right? Just
are.
bringing it back full circle. So I'd love for you to share with us, your book is coming out soon. When's the release date? How can we get our hands on it? And then also just share where we can find more from you.
Yeah, absolutely. So the book here is coming out October 21st. You can find it on Amazon or by going to transformingtoddlerhood.com/book. And what makes this book so special? It is the first book of its kind. It's a comprehensive, science-based, easy-to-digest guide for parenting toddlers. It's 45 short chapters divided into five sections, the toddler parent, the toddler explained, the emotional toddler, the physical toddler, and the social toddler. Basically, every challenge that you might ever have parenting your toddler, there's a chapter for it in this book. So, this is like
Wow.
your parenting companion on your nightstand. There is a chapter for separation anxiety, whining, mealtime chaos, bedtime battles, screen time, big feelings. Even for yourself, like unsupportive, a parenting partner, how to set limits, decoding behavior. It's literally all packed in here. It's like the guide that everyone wishes came with their toddler, and it's finally arrived.
Oh, that's amazing. And it comes out so soon. I saw too that you're offering some bonuses too if they pre-order. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so if you buy the book prior to October 21st, and you go to transformingtoddlerhood.com /book and put in your receipt number and your email, we're going to send you several awesome bonuses, including the patient parent playbook. So it's all
I
about how
saw
to stay
that. That's good.
calm, setting limits with confidence, which is a lot about what we talked about here. It's like my in-depth course on setting limits. And then also, how to parent with your partner. And so that's a toolkit that really helps you if you and your partner, parenting partner, are not on the same page.
Oh man, I love those bonuses. That's amazing. I'm so excited for your book.
Thank
Congratulations on
you.
it. And you're on Instagram, you're other places. Can you share other places people can learn more from you?
Yeah, so the best place to find me and where I'm most active is on Instagram at Transforming Toddlerhood. And then, of course, you can always see all of my offerings on my website, Transforming Toddlerhood, too. I kept it simple. Everything's just called Transforming
That's the way
Toddlerhood.
to do it. Well, I'm so grateful that you came on and shared all your wisdom with us. I just cannot tell you how much everything you have taught has helped. So we didn't even talk about your conference, which is how I like kind of first got to know you and
Yeah.
got to speak there, but also learn from the amazing creators you brought together. And of course, all under the umbrella of what you teach and the strategies that you teach. And it just absolutely has changed not only my parenting, but others as well. So just thank you for all the work you do. Thanks for coming on the podcast and sharing with my people all about the amazing work that you do. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much. And thank you for everything you're doing in the world. I feel the same about you and your work.
I know. I just like to like hyper fixate on picky eating. It's such a big ish like topic and issue. And like I said, I tend to just naturally have learned it and really practiced it. But the other parenting stuff, I need just as much help as the normal parent. So I, for whatever reason, there's a disconnect in my brain to bring it over to all areas. But thanks again, and to all of the people listening right now, I will see you next week with a brand new episode.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. I hope you're walking away with some tangible ways to bring peace to your mealtimes. And if you like this episode, please subscribe and tell all your mom friends. And as always, the best compliment you can give me is leaving a rating and written review, which also helps other mamas like you find this podcast too. You can find more from me on Instagram at Nutrition for Littles. Do you have a question you'd like me to answer on the podcast? Email me at Alyssa at nutritionforlittles.com. All right, until next time, mamas.